The following is a paid program. The opinions expressed are solely those of the sponsor and not necessarily those of WFAS or its advertisers.
Peace of mind with Littman Crooks.
Welcome to Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney. I'm your host, Bernie Crooks, from the law firm Littman Crooks. We've got offices in White Plains, Manhattan, and Fishkill, New York. And the show is heard every Thursday evening from 6:05 to 6:35 p.m. right here on WFAS AM 1230. Tonight, our guest is Dr. Randy Thomas, and Randy is a licensed psychologist and practices neuropsychology. Did I get that right?
You got it. You got it.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot. Happy to be here.
All right, so let's start with, it's a long word, neuropsychology. What is it?
Well, it's a big word that basically means we study the relationship between a person's brain and their behavior. So we are able to look at a child's behavior and understand how it might correlate with particular functions of the brain, and in that way helps us to understand better child's strengths and weaknesses and how it impacts their learning and their behavior.
So I guess this is the $64,000 question. Is behavior something that's in your DNA, or does it depend on your environment?
Well, obviously both. We've come a long way in the last 20 years, and we understand that it's not an either-or, that the child's neurological functioning and their genetic makeup has a big impact in terms of how they behave. But that's obviously influenced by their experiences and their learning, that the brain responds to a child's experiences by developing in particular ways that then impact what they can do and what they can't do.
All right, so to make sure I got this right, you can have one child who's got a certain type of brain, and if you put him in one family, he might develop differently, and if you put him in the next-door neighbor's house, he might end up completely different.
Yeah, sure, within a certain range, that the neurology sort of sets limits, but then the environment impacts what happens with those limits.
So in order for you to do your work, Dr. Thomas, do you need to look at any data such as like MRIs or CAT scans? Does that have any relevance to what you do?
I will look at that, although what happens generally is that's the kind of data that the neurologists use for children who are more severely impaired. The kinds of kids that I usually see are kids whose impairment won't show up on an MRI or a CAT scan. It's not that severe. It's much more subtle. And so we have to use psychological tests to study a child's behavior and what their abilities are to get a better understanding in terms of their neurological strengths and weaknesses.
Right. So you just mentioned a couple of things. You mentioned a neurologist. You mentioned a psychologist. You're a neuropsychologist. What's the difference between a neuropsychologist, psychologist, and a neurologist?
Well, both a neurologist and a neuropsychologist have studied the brain extensively in terms of how it functions and what areas of the brain relate to specific behaviors. So they're very similar, although, as I said, most neurologists focus primarily on kids who are severely neurologically damaged, and the neuropsychologist fine-tunes his work to address children who have subtle learning disabilities, attentional difficulties, things that are less severe. We're similar, again, also to psychologists because all psychologists study a child's behavior and try to explain it in various ways. A psychoanalytically trained psychologist would be looking more at a child's life experiences to understand why a child might be having the difficulty that they are having based on their experience. And they're just using a different theoretical background, whereas a neuropsychologist is primarily thinking about how a behavior may reflect particular neurological functioning.
All right, so give me an example of a child whose manifested behavior would necessitate going to a neuropsychologist versus a child whose behavior would simply necessitate him going to a psychologist?
Well, again, primarily the types of children that we are helpful with are children who are having difficulty in school learning. because we know learning is closely correlated with cognition and neurological functioning. So typically you'll have a child who's not reading or having difficulty in terms of their math functioning. And we know that these academic difficulties can be correlated with particular weaknesses in a child's neurological functioning. But in addition to that, I may see children with attentional difficulties because attention is closely related to and influenced by the functioning of the prefrontal cortex of the brain. And so these are children who we assess in terms of their abilities as it relates to those functions that are correlated with the frontal cortex.
Okay, so you mentioned behavior. Can behavior get in the way of learning?
Oh, absolutely.
How?
All the time. Well, again, in a variety of ways, behavior that's influenced by a child's experiences, but also behavior that's influenced by neurological development. I mean, autism is a classic example of that, in which we know that there are some impairments neurologically that impact the child's capacity to relate. Children who have Asperger's syndrome, again, is a typical example of a child who has difficulty in terms of their social relationships and often their behavior that doesn't necessarily impact their learning specifically, but primarily impacts their ability to relate and behave in a socially appropriate manner.
So why is it that you hear stories about some kids who are 6, 7, 8, 10, 12 years old, they don't have friends? What is it that they can't do that gets in the way of them having friends?
They can't understand what you might be thinking and what your intentions might be, so that it's very hard for them to know and understand the interactions that other people are having, really from a psychological point of view. And so as a consequence, they don't necessarily know how to coordinate their own behavior in response to other people's needs or emotions, because they're really clueless as far as that's concerned. They don't really understand other people's feelings and emotions in a way that they can respond to it and have a sensitive interpersonal relationship.
But why is it that they can't get that, but if you ask that same child, do you want to go to McDonald's, they'll say, oh, yeah, sure, that sounds great, I'll have a cheeseburger.
Well, because, again, the brain is very complex, and so different parts of the brain serve various functions. And so one can be very verbal and have tremendous capacity to talk and interrelate or learn factual information. And that aspect of their neurological functioning is intact. And yet those aspects of the brain that help one understand other people emotionally is impaired. And so this is just a reflection of variations in neurological functioning.
Have you worked with kids who can't develop these social relationships?
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Are you ever able to help them?
Oh, sure, because we understand, just as you're saying, that these kids can understand things from a factual basis, and you can kind of teach them in a sort of a rote way how to behave in relationship to other people. And so we develop what we would refer to as compensatory techniques. We use their strengths to help them compensate for those areas of weakness and help them to learn how to interact with others in a somewhat different fashion than you and I might learn to relate to.
When you say use techniques, it's not simply, well, okay, next time you see Charlie, I want you to do this. It's got to be more involved than that.
Well, again, with these children who have the types of social difficulties we're talking about, one of the interventions that we use is we do give them scripts so that they can learn. In fact, some of the researchers in this area have identified that these children can learn scripts extremely well, so that if you put them in a play, they can perform all the dialogue in an expert way. And so that's partly the skills that we use to help them in interpersonal relationships. Obviously, interpersonal relationships are much more complex than being on stage, in which the script is written out completely. But nonetheless, we can teach children what the script might be for different situations to help them to be more comfortable and know what to do in these situations. Because otherwise, they don't necessarily know and they can't figure it out.
And what's the process like? I mean, is it something that takes 6 weeks, 6 years? I mean, what's a reasonable time period for a parent to expect if they've got a child with these issues?
Well, it all depends on the severity of the impairment. And the more severe the impairment, the longer it takes and the harder work that one has to engage in to help the child. So sometimes these are issues that kids need help with for several years. I've worked for kids sometimes for 5, 6, 7 years, helping them to negotiate and develop their skills so that they can function productively. Other children, you know, you can work in a briefer period of time. It's really related to the severity of the impairment.
And you're working directly with the child, not necessarily with the parents?
Well, I will do both because obviously my working with a child for a brief period of time, seeing them, let's say, once or twice a week for a couple hours is not the most comprehensive way of helping kids. So families obviously are with kids 24 hours a day, and so we can also help parents understand the particular needs of their child, what their strengths and weaknesses are, and teach them as well in terms of how they can be helpful to their child and teach them some of the skills that I might teach them in the office.
I'm Bernie Crooks, host of Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney. We're talking with Dr. Randy Thomas, who's a neuropsychologist. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Sooner or later, disability or illness strikes every family. And unfortunately, that's not the time to do the planning. The best time is in advance, before a crisis strikes.
Bernie Crooks from the law firm of Lippman Crooks.
Susan, Vincent and Sheila's oldest daughter, had called us because one of her friend's parents recently had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And their financial affairs were a mess. They had not done any advance planning.
Susan didn't want that to happen to her parents. The caring professionals at Lippman Crooks helped her design a comprehensive plan that provided for long-term care while protecting her parents' hard-earned assets.
Susan and her siblings now have the peace of mind of knowing that their parents can go on with the rest of their lives without having to worry about what would happen if one of them became sick or disabled.
Your parents had big plans for you. Make sure you have one for them. Call the law offices of Lippman Crooks in White Plains and Manhattan.
Peace of mind with Lippman.
Call 914-684-2100.
Also located in Fishkill.
Welcome back to Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney. I'm your host, Bernie Crooks from the law firm Lippman Crooks. You can visit us online at lippmancrooks.com. And tonight we're talking with Dr. Randy Thomas, who's a neuropsychologist. And before the break, we were chatting about socialization issues for kids with disabilities. And another issue that we see from time to time, Dr. Thomas, is behavioral. Are these different challenges dealing with the kid who walks into the classroom and spits on other kids and hits other kids and turns the lights off and touches people in inappropriate places? Are those different challenges?
Well, they're certainly different behaviors, and what we need to do and what's involved in the psychological evaluation is to assess all aspects of a child's functioning so we can determine, are there neurological factors that's causing the child to behave in this fashion, or are these behaviors that would be primarily consistent with some emotional disorder? And so the evaluation that I do covers both of those areas. It's neuropsychological, and we utilize tests that primarily assess a child's cognitive strengths and weaknesses. But if there are questions in terms of a child's behavioral functioning, I also will do a personality assessment that basically uses a child's imagination to help us understand what's their capacity to deal with anxiety and conflict, And what are the sources of some of the behaviors that may be disrupting their functioning?
Now, these tests that you use, I got to imagine for a child who has difficulty communicating with others or who has behavioral issues, you don't just sit down in a room and say, okay, Charlie, we're going to do this test. I mean, there's got to be a challenge for you in order to administer the test properly.
Well, that's true. And again, it varies tremendously as far as you know, how troubled the child is. But you'd be surprised. You know, kids are largely responsive to the adults who are there, and we certainly do everything we can to help them to function at their optimal level. And most kids are able to do that, surprisingly.
Now, you mentioned some of the behavioral issues might be the result of a neurological impairment. Is it common or typical for a kid who might have a seizure disorder to also have behavioral issues?
Well, sure. Again, we know that neurological functioning impacts a child's behavior. Seizure disorders usually impacts a child's memory and their capacity to learn information that's presented to them. Perhaps the best instance of behavior being neurologically based is kids who are impulsive in nature. And you may have a child who's gotten into a lot of trouble with the law and has had social difficulties in that fashion. And you can find out by testing the child that they have an impulse disorder, that in fact, from a neurological perspective, they're not able to stop themselves from doing things that that you and I would recognize and understand are wrong and be able to stop ourselves. So this is an instance in which a behavior is clearly impacted by a child's impairment neurologically.
Is it possible that some kids might even shoplift because there's some type of impulse behavior created by some type of impairment?
Absolutely, and that's why with these behaviors, we try not to make the assumption that it's emotional purely or as a consequence of some trouble in the family or some experience that they've had, but recognize that there may be some neurological factors also that are impacting them.
Now, you mentioned a little while ago learning disabilities. Tell us about learning disabilities and how that might impact a child's ability to be successful.
Well, this is one of the major areas that we look at as neuropsychologists. School is a terribly important part, and a significant portion of a child's life is spent in school. And it is very much based, their performance in school is very much based on what their cognitive strengths and weaknesses are. So if I'm a child who has some verbal difficulties cognitively, I am likely to have difficulty reading. Vice versa, if I'm a child who has difficulty in the visual spatial arena, this is an area that impacts a child's capacity to do well in math. So partly what we're doing as neuropsychologists is performing these assessments to get a basic sense of a child's intellectual ability. And then in addition to that, do achievement testing to make a comparison to see whether they're learning to the extent that they're capable. And this, what is referred to as a discrepancy analysis, is one of the bases for determining whether a child has a learning disability. Are they really learning to the extent that we would expect based on their intellectual abilities, their verbal abilities, their visual capacities, and other skills?
Do you ever get called upon to do an assessment for the purpose of determining whether or not the child should be classified as somebody who's in need of special education services?
Oh, yes. Again, this is one of the primary things that primary goals that we have as neuropsychologists is to determine the degree of the impairment, whether there is a neurological base to it, whether it's consistent with a specific learning disability that would require special education efforts.
I mean, because that's a big deal, right? Because if the child's entitled to the special education services, then the district's required to provide a whole host of services, including related services like occupational, physical therapy, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly.
So would you be called upon by the district, or would it be the parent that would bring you in?
Both will actually ask me and utilize my services. Most commonly, it's the family that's coming to me. But I have relationships with local school districts also. And if they have some questions about a child and what might be impacting their learning or their behavior, they may also ask me to do an evaluation to identify whether, in fact, there is a learning disability.
And a learning disability that would qualify the child to receive these additional services?
Yes.
And I guess there's a fine line, right, between a child who might not be as good in math as the parents would like him or her to be and a child who really has a disability.
Well, sure. And in that sense, we try to objectify this situation so that the child's performance is not being compared to what the parent might expect them to be able to do, but is being compared to what their ability is to see whether there's some lag in their achievement. And also some specific neuropsychological deficits that could account for their lack of achievement.
I mean, just because the child's older brother was in advanced math in seventh grade and then the next sibling is not in advanced math doesn't mean he has a learning disability.
No, absolutely not.
But maybe the parent thinks so.
Well, sure, sure.
All right, so you get involved. And it's not a lot of times you're not just involved in doing assessment, but there's ongoing work, right?
Oh, yes. After the assessment and we have identified what the child's strengths and weaknesses are, then we develop a plan that involves both the types of interventions that will be helpful in school and what the teachers may be doing there, as well as what the parents might be doing at home with the child, but then whether there's some benefit for some counseling or some psychological services.
And if there is, and the child is entitled to special ed services pursuant to his individualized educational program, is it possible that these services would be paid for by the school district?
Oh, sure. The school district is responsible for paying for services to address these special needs. When it's been documented that a child has a learning disability, and again, that's the purpose of the neuropsychological evaluation, to clearly identify that there is a disability, then the child becomes classified by the Committee on Special Education, and the school is responsible for determining the most appropriate placement.
Have you ever had a case where you couldn't help a kid?
Yes, of course. We always run into those situations. I always say to families, if you're committed to the work, it's rare that I see progress as far as kids are concerned. You have a committed child, you have a committed family, and you will see progress. So it's often, although, you know, many people like to think that they have to find a good match between the child and the psychologist. My experience is that if the family is committed and the child has a disorder that can be treated by a psychologist, you will see progress.
I'm speaking with Dr. Randy Thomas, a neuropsychologist. This is Bernie Crooks, host of Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney. We've got to take a short break and we'll be right back.
Unexpected medical crises can turn lives upside down. Here's Bernie Crooks from the law firm of Littman Crooks.
Barbara called. I could tell something was wrong. She was calling from the hospital. Her husband had a stroke. Harry was going to need care in a long-term facility, perhaps for the rest of his life.
Barbara couldn't find the necessary documents.
Unfortunately, this is all too common. One spouse gets sick and the other spouse has absolutely no idea where the financial records are.
Harry quickly got the care he needed. In addition to helping Barbara gather and submit the appropriate paperwork, the experts at Littman Crooks also helped access government-financed health care to help pay Harry's medical bills.
Although we can't help Harry get better, Barbara has the peace of mind of knowing their hard-earned family assets will be available to help pay for Barbara's care in the future and to pass on to their children and grandchildren and not be eaten away by the cost of Harry's long-term care.
When a medical crisis strikes, call the law offices of Littman Crooks in White Plains and Manhattan.
Peace of mind with Littman Crooks.
Call 914-684-2100.
Also located in Fishkill.
Welcome back to Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney. I'm your host, Bernie Crooks, from the law firm Littman Crooks. And we've just got a few minutes left here talking with Dr. Randy Thomas. Now, Dr. Thomas, you've been doing this for a long time, right?
Yes, I have, for over 20 years.
What got you into the field?
Oh, gosh, that goes back a long way. I was involved in a program when I was in college that was called Williams at Home, and we went to live with families in various parts of the United States. And so I was living with families in Appalachia. I was living with farmers in rural Iowa. And I think at that time I realized that I really enjoyed understanding and appreciating different people's perspective and what their life was like and what impacted them most significantly.
That's interesting, because a lot of times when you're working with especially children with emotional disorders, you never really get an answer, right? I mean, sometimes you just can't get to the bottom of it.
You know, honestly, that's rare. That's rare. And one of the things that I like so much about neuropsychological testing is that it provides a wealth of data in a short period of time. My assessments take between 8 and 10 hours working with a child, usually 4 or 5 times for a couple hours apiece. And the amount of data that we can gather in terms of a child's ability to perform different tasks and seeing what their imagination is like, you really learn a lot.
And is this something that happens once a week, twice a week? How often? What's a typical scenario for a patient to visit with you?
Well, again, the evaluation is different than treatment, and the evaluation is a short-term involvement. As I said, it involves sitting down with the family initially, hearing what their observations are, hearing what other people are observing about the child, getting developmental history, family history, school history. And then following that, I'm with the child, as I said, for 4 or 5 sessions of a couple hours apiece. I'm gathering the data that I need to draw some conclusions. And then after that, I write up a full report, sit down with the family, talk with them in depth about the findings and what the recommendations are. And then from that point, we try to share that information with everybody who will be helpful to the child and try to get them on the right track.
Including the school district and the teachers?
Yep, absolutely.
I mean, this way they'll have a better understanding of what they're dealing with.
Absolutely.
And I heard you mention a couple times the families. Do you stay involved with them on an ongoing basis?
Absolutely. You know, I'm available at any point for them to ask questions in terms of their child's development. Often I will reevaluate a child a couple years, 2 or 3 years down the road to see how they're progressing. And I'm consulting with the school to help them to develop interventions that will be effective.
Do you find that the siblings of kids with emotional or mental disabilities end up being different, more mature, more understanding, different than siblings of typical kids?
I think they tend to be more sensitive, and of course there are a whole range of scenarios. Many times the family unfortunately is so involved with the child with special needs that sometimes the other children get a little bit of the short end of the stick and are upset about that, and that has to be identified. But also when the parents become sensitive to the child does, the sibling does as well, and understands that they have a sibling with special needs and respond to them accordingly.
I'm Bernie Crooks. We've got to take one more short break, and we'll be right back to wrap up with Dr. Thomas.
All his life, little Stevie has been special. When he grows up, he probably won't be able to live on his own or work to support himself. Stevie's parents already worry about what will become of their sweet boy after they're gone. Kim was a corporate executive until a drunk driver ended her career and nearly her life. Now she has a traumatic brain injury, a sizable settlement, but no clear plan for the future. Stevie and Kim could each use a special needs trust to secure their finances, care, and maximum independence while letting them keep their public benefits such as SSI and Medicaid. Who can set up a special needs trust? The law firm of Littman Crooks, members of the Special Needs Alliance, a national network of disability and public benefits lawyers. If you or someone you love has special needs, greater peace of mind is just a phone call away. Call Littman Crooks today, 684-2100, or visit littmancrooks.com, because special people need special plans.
Peace of mind with Littman Crooks.
Welcome back to the show. Dr. Thomas, how can people get in touch with you?
Just give me a call. My number is 845-471-2267. That's in Poughkeepsie, New York. And my office in New York City, 845-416-5842.
Well, you've given us a wealth of information. I want to thank you for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
This is Bernie Crooks, host of Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney. We're heard right here on WFAS AM 1230 every Thursday evening from 6:05 to 6:35 p.m. We'll see everyone next week. Good night.